You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
with your life.
Running like a red disease.
Running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life there's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Great program we have for you today with Brother Mickey Dean of the National Black United Front, MBUF. We'll be talking to him in a minute. I'm going to read the Inya Sesem to Daily Revolutionary Thought, and then we're going to go right into the program. No announcements for today. So I'm trying to utilize as much time with this brother as I can. Yeah, good man, Brother Mickey Dean. June 23rd, Africans, we must wake up. We have slept too long and retreated far longer than necessary. Parents and grandparents must cease enrolling their children in public schools that are designed to expand criminal institutions that benefit the oppressor's children. It is time to realistically plant the seed of liberation, build our own, for our own, and within our own. Brothers and sisters, we have almost run out of time. If we don't have a sovereign nation by 2050, what will be our destiny? Extinction by assimilation, genocide or mental physical enslavement. Mama Nabantu. Assuming that we mistakenly believe that we are no longer enslaved outside of the infallible will of those of us who unqualifyingly refuse to accept or even acknowledge the possibilities of being externally and rightfully vanquished. There is nothing in the universe which says that Africans cannot be re-enslaved. Just like rebellion and revolution, slavery is a choice. The option that we select for ourselves and our children depends upon the depth of our critical historical awareness, the strength of our historical knowing in its political application, and recognition of our historical oppression, our historical determination to permanently escape through building sovereignty one generation at a time. Our ancestors forewarned, told us that slaves deserve slaves for children. I repeat, our ancestors forewarned, told us that slaves deserve slaves for children. Is this the future that we is this the future that we as a people want for those yet to come? Is this what we want to return to? Have we become so selfishly individualistic in delusional pursuit? family. Is this what we want to return to? Have we become so selfishly individualistic and delusional pursuit of Urugu's love, admiration, and trinkets that we can only see our responsibilities to our children through the menticidal, assimilative, genocidal, enslaved lens Urugu has prescribed for us? Affirm, I am building our own for our own within our own. Affirm, I am building our own within our own. June 24th. Western ideas color our conscious and unconscious thoughts to such a degree that even when we think we are safe in sleep, we dream Western dreams. S.K. DeMonte. They inject their insanity into everyone until every tortured soul loses his or her mind and becomes one of them. Nothing in Urugu's reality works toward African sanity. Therefore, whatever we may build to empower our sanity and sustain it
at its optimal must exist outside the spiritual, cultural, and physical confinements of their matrix. Our ancestors did not send us here to be under Urugu. Strive. Starve that confusion. With all due haste, warriors must move toward movement. True momentum does not require constant motivation. Neediness is not becoming of warriors. Limits are for the limited. Be unlimited. Affirm, I dream African dreams. Affirm, I dream African dreams. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sasim of daily revolutionary thought. Baba Baruti. Yeah, I had a good time with Baba Baruti yesterday. Yeah, he did a great presentation. Dr. Amos Wilson and Mama Rimba. Mama Rimba Ani was there. She promoting her book. So, yeah, all right. Brother Mickey Dean.
Greetings, brother. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you well.
Okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, my brother. How are you?
Well, you know my line, brother.
Okay. I know. I know your line, man. Yes, sir.
But as we get old, it's very important that we try to take care of ourselves and to try to be on this side as long as we can. So I'm working hard to do that and staying busy.
All right on, man. So okay. I'm doing the same thing, man. I wanna be here. You know? You gotta try to be here. Cause this is not a sprint. This is a marathon, you know? And depending upon how well we endure, will the success be, you know? So that's my contention. Let's stay in this fight, man, and it is a fight. So the National Black United Front is having its convention in Kansas City. It's always in July. And it's going to be July 12th through the 14th. This is the 45th annual National Black United Front Convention. And that speaks volumes to the longevity of the organization and its willingness to stay in that fight. And I'm proud to have been a member, or be a member of the National Black United Front.
And let me just say, Brother Oshie, you know, this is the 45th anniversary, and I've seen lots of organizations, both local and national, come and go in those 45 years.
Yeah.
We in Kansas City, we formed our chapter in 1981. So we're in our 43rd or 44th year here in Kansas City. And I wasn't at the first convention in Brooklyn, but as I understand, there were, I don't know, 1,600 people there in the organization.
Wow.
And you know, our movement has gone through quite a few transitions over the last 45 years or so. Mm-hmm. In terms of when I say movement, I mean the sort of the revolutionary nationalist trend.
Right.
It's not vibrant as it once was. So I think it is a testament to those in the Black United Front that we're still here. After 45 years, I think it's fair to say that we're not, what we were when this organization started with 1,500 people at this initial convention, but you know we're still here, we're still doing the work, still trying to liberate our people, and we've had a really successful tenure here in Kansas City. We've always had a rather strong chapter here.
Yes, very strong chapter. Yes, I attested that.
Yeah. Made an intentional move a few years ago to try to infuse young people into our leadership, and so we did that, and so we're still here. We're still fighting the battles here in Kansas City.
Ashe, yeah. And that's what needs to happen. You need to inject the organization with new leadership, with young leadership. And there always should be a succession plan for organizations that you were in this long fight. I just mentioned the fact that it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And so in order to run this marathon, This is like a relay race. You need to hand that baton off so you can continue to go. You continue to move forward, you know. And we need young people. We need conscious young people, you know. I'm involved in another I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, one of our elders, Leon Dixon, that's one of his favorite phrases. We got to pass the baton.
That's right. Know? I say.
That's what we've that's what we tried to do over the years.
Yeah, we have to do that. You know, if you want the organization to be around and to deal with the issues and deal with them seriously, we have to do that. And so that necessitates for us to educate and train these young folks as they come up for that leadership, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, the other advantage, Ocean, is that with young people come new, fresh, young ideas.
Yes.
We went through a tough period during COVID when everything transitioned to doing things viral and online. And I'm telling you, you know, there were 2 years where we had to do virtual conventions. I think it was 2020 and 2021. Mm-hmm. And had it not been for those young folks that were up on this technology, we'd have been lost, man.
Right on, right.
You know,
yep.
You know,
yeah.
You know, you got folks and stuff and Brother Dixon, Samaria, Jamu. I mean, we couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
So we were have those young people who were able to, you know, who were familiar with these platforms, and we're able to pull off 2 virtual conventions. And
right.
So now we're back to person. The other advantage is that I think we did one of the virtual conventions, but I think the last in-person convention we did here was, I think it was 2017 or 2018. And a lot of the young people in our leadership now some of them were not part of the organization
at that time.
So it was their first experience at actually doing an in-person convention. And so there's positives and negatives in that.
Sure.
One of the things is that, as you know, because we had conventions in Milwaukee, there's certain things that you have to do to pull off a convention. I mean, there are certain concepts that take place. But the fact that there are a lot of things about how we used to do stuff they didn't know, it turned out to be an advantage. Because one of the things that we never tell you is that, well, that ain't how we used to do it.
Right.
You know? That's not part of our vocabulary.
Right on.
So they have new ideas, things that we may not have even thought about in terms of how to do these conventions. So it was really refreshing to have, you know, some young people step up and say, well, let's try this, let's try that. So you're going to get a combination of the tried and tested and also some innovation.
Right on. That's beautiful. That's great. Yeah. You have to encourage them and embrace them in their ideas and see if you can definitely try to make them work, because you want them in the organization. You want them to continue on with the battle, you know. If you say, oh, we ain't doing it that way, it's how we've always done it this way, there's, you know, they're discouraged. They say, well, forget y'all then, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, but there's two organizations for sure. International Black United Front that are solid, which is Kansas City and Houston. You know, how is Chicago doing? Because Chicago was
Chicago does not have an active chapter at this point. There's still what we call a couple of at-large people in Chicago. But like I said, it's kind of like a lot of places around the country. I mean, mm-hmm. If you look at a lot of the organizations now, you know, the Malcolm X Grassroots Liberation Movement, the Republic of New Africa, New African People's Organization, December 12th Movement, a lot of these organizations are really sort of regional or local. And there's a, in terms of in the revolutionary national movement, a real national organization that they have chapters in 10, 12, 15 cities. You know, NBUF had chapters in 14 or 15 cities at one point.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But very few of those organizations have that type of reach. As a matter of fact, I just want to interject this. There's a movement afoot. It's called the National Liberation Unity Movement that was conceived at the conference in Atlanta. I think I saw you there, right?
Yeah.
2 or 3 years ago?
Yes.
And so some of us had some discussions one morning about the fact that we don't have in our trend in the movement, we don't have a national collective movement. And so right now we're working on this, what we call this National Liberation Unity Movement, where we're trying to pull together not an organization, but a network of all of the organizations that are trend to see if we can do some things collectively, because one of the things we realize is that on our own, we're just not going to make much of an impact in terms of liberating our people.
Right.
If we just stand in all those small silos. So what we're trying to do is put together a national network so that we can do some things collectively, work on some things collectively, and see if we can really have an impact around the country in our people's movement. So that's one of the things MBUF is participating in, along with some other organizations.
And that's that needs to happen, because the reality is that we need unity, functional unity. And when you have an organization that's doing things in this area and it calls itself a national organization, but yet it doesn't have that kind of influence, and another organization here and there and there and there, the benefit of really making it strong and having a strong voice is bringing all that together. But a lot of times, some of those organizations, they just want to they just want to keep their little, identity and their membership and what they're doing, as opposed to bringing it all together. I know I'm a member of the the Pan-African Federalist Movement. That's another organization that's trying to do it collectively on a national and international scale, because the objective of the Pan-African Federalist Movement is to have the continent unified, and so we can say that we speak for the continent of Africa and African people. We speak and control the land and the resources and so forth, because Africa having 54 sovereign countries is bullshit. They don't have 54 sovereign countries. They don't have too many sovereign anything. And that's what we need, is sovereignty. And so in order for that to really happen, a lot of countries and governments have to give up, to be a part of the whole. And sometimes they're not willing to do that. Ours. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I agree. I think that, most of the governments on the continent now are basically neo-colonialist.
Yeah.
And what's really needed is a new independence movement on the continent of Africa,
yes.
Particularly. I don't want to just say only young people, but, younger people are just not wedded to certain things that some of these. And there's just so much corruption in these neo-colonial governments, and they're very much tied to their former colonial masters. I'm glad to see, some of the things that are taking place in the Sahel region. I'm really curious to see how that's going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
But there seems to be an anti-colonial trend that's moving across the continent. And as you said, and I go back to Osagyefe Kwame Nkrumah said in his book Africa Must Unite. He said that it's not good if Ghana is the only independent country
right.
on the continent, because
right.
it can be violent. African unity.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we get a united socialist Africa.
Right.
And of course the imperialists have done everything they can to thwart that, to keep Africa divided, to promote one country or another. And it's a constant battle. But I think what you're speaking of, the need to unify African people throughout the diaspora is really, really important, and it's really vital to our ability to really win this fight.
That's right. It's key. It's critical, because we're not going to do this just because we're American Africans. We're not going to do this because we're Caribbean Africans. We're not going to do this because we're continental. We're going to do this because we are Africans, regardless wherever we are, and we adhere to these principles of liberation, self-determination, sovereignty for African people. You know, the model of this program here has always been and we always will be Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die, you know, because there is no other way. Now, you know, we can have conferences all we want. We can talk about in marches and talk about reparations, you know, and all this. But until we have a unified, that's why the National Black United Front is very important, to have that kind of cohesion that we need to forcefully make our demands and then have them adhered to. Because otherwise, you know, you're just a fraction. You're just this, you're just that. We can get played. And of course, you know, a lot of times there's some of us who look like us who's doing the playing. They're manipulating. They're working for, you know, the powers that be, just like on the continent. So, you know, we have a lot of work ahead, and that's why, to me, what you're saying about involving the young people is critical.
And you know, bro, so you probably been in this as long as I have, if not longer. You know, I got my start back in my hometown of Sandersville, Georgia, which I tell everybody is the hometown of Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I never leave that out when I mention the hometown.
Right on.
But I think maybe 15 or 16 when I got in my first marches, and I was fortunate that when I did go to college in Atlanta, I mean, it was the height of the Black Power movement, and I got involved then in one of the first national organizations with SOBU, the Student Organization for Black Unity. And, you know, at that time, I'm talking about the very early 70s, you know, if you'd have said, well, Mickey, what is this movement going to look like 50 years from now? I said, man, we should be free, you know?
Yeah.
And 50 years of doing this, and sometimes it can be a bit discouraging to see, you know, after 50 years, mm-hmm, you know,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes I wonder in terms of our national liberation movement, you know, how much progress have we made? You know, we know that the enemy is doing everything in their power to try to stop us. We know what they can do. We've seen what they can do with their tactics. I mean, they have no problem imprisoning people, killing people, destroying organizations. We know that. But still, at that time, I would have thought, you know, if you'd asked me back then, and we talked about back then, that, you know, we would have made a lot more progress in terms of trying to create a better society. But, you know, it goes on. The work goes on. You can't give up. The work goes on.
Right.
And we just have to pass it on to the next generation to keep this fight up.
Yeah. Well, just like I said, this is not a sprint. It's a marathon. And so we got to prepare ourselves for the long haul, for the long run. You know, it's not going to be – I mean, because what makes it really difficult is the fact that we're so fragmented. If we had a solid collective group of brothers and sisters who understood that we need to be unified regardless of all the others who, you know, who don't think that way, who are not thinking African. You know, I promote being African. I don't promote being black. You know, when I say this, Brother Mickey, I think about Dr. Clark, you know, who always said that we are African, we're not black. You know, when you talk about a people, you must conjure up land, history, and culture, you know. And because we have, and I know that many of us use Africa and black synonymously, you know, but the reality, many people who are profess to be black, they don't want to be African. They want to be black in reference to, in relation to being white, you know. So they want what whites have. They want jobs. They want the careers. They want to live in this. They want the education and so forth. But they want to be black, you know, not African. They want to be here in America. They want to share in what whites have.
And yeah, what they want is a diverse society. They want diversity, inclusiveness.
Right. Inclusiveness, exactly. You know, and in their in Urugu or Europeans or Caucasians society, you are always they'll give you the illusion of inclusion because they always are about domination and control, you know. And so if you just want to accept that, you're just happy with you being. And see, that's the thing about individualism. That is a European Caucasian desire. Europe individualism, that's what they want. But for us as the African people, it's always been about being collective. We know that from the very beginnings of human existence. We knew that being more collective, we had more for those in the group, for those in the quote clan or the tribe, whatever, being collective. That has been the African model. That's why it reached its apex in Kemet. Those brothers and sisters built on a monumental level. Why? Because they were collective. Those things that were done by us were not done because somebody was enslaved. Somebody suffered the sting of the lash. They were done because people were collective and they understood that, hey, we got to get together and do this. Directives were made and ideas were thought out and timelines and so forth, and they were adhered to, you know? But because, you know, the European, his whole thing is, you know, domination and control. And unfortunately for us, it's detrimental. So, but I, you know, I tell you, Mickey, it's tough. It's tough to see what we could possibly be if we involved ourselves in organization, such as the National Black United Front or any other organization that speaks to that, and then work with other organizations. And that's what we need to do.
Brother Kwame Ture emphasized organization. That was one of his main things. Organize. What organization do you belong to?
That's right.
And just like organizations, you have individuals that, you know, they do good work in the community, but they want to be free to do their own thing. Mm-hmm. They don't want to come under the discipline of an organization. Not understanding that you get a lot more accomplished when you organize as you can individually.
Right.
And so, you know, as you said, this country promotes individualism. It promotes go it alone. That's sort of the standard. And it goes against our culture, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
We've always been collective, at least in terms of the times that we've thrived and survived. It's been through our collective operation, our collective work, and so forth.
Yes. Yeah. And I know that many of us, particularly who are in leadership of organizations, we know that that is the best way for us to move, you know. But yet, sometimes when the leadership tries to hold on and not develop a succession plan or not allow others to rise to the top or take the leadership, now, I ain't talking about take the leadership forcefully, but take the leadership because it is your time, you know. And people are looking to you to elevate the organization, you know, because that's what we need. We need brothers and sisters, to step up, you know, and to move the organization, everything that we do, to continue to move it forward. And, of course, the reality is, what is our end game? You know, in this fight, what is our end game? And I remember I did a program on that. Go ahead, Brother Mickey.
And that's one of the things that we're trying to focus on a little bit, as I'll get into in a little bit with this convention, is to try to look at where are we headed with this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the things that we decided to focus on to a certain extent with this convention.
Yeah. Because we got to know that we're doing what we're doing, but what is our ultimate goal? You know, I know that there was organizations created like the NAACP and the Urban League and number of organizations for many years that have been in existence for many years and are still in existence, you know. But when you look at those organizations, I don't know how you want to evaluate them based on the fact that, oh, well, look at now when the organization was founded back in 1909 and so forth. Look how many people have look how many congresspersons we have. Look the fact that we have a couple of senators, a couple, you know, or this, that. We're still looking at it and measuring it to Caucasians and their society because the whole thing was how can we best fit in their society? Because it is theirs. It is theirs. And believe me, they they let you know it in certain terms. They let you know it. And we've always put ourselves into a mode of begging, of pleading, hire us, promote us, let us go to your schools, let us live in this neighborhood, and so forth. You know, because
yeah, well, you know, if you do their bidding, you can rise up in this country. You can even be president of the United States.
Yep, Barack. That's right. If you do their bidding, that's right. Look at Barack, you know. Yeah. And that's the thing. For us as African people, if we do their bidding, it's going to be to our detriment. And that's what we don't understand. It will be to our detriment collectively. It may benefit you. It may be some few folks that you know or your family, whatever. But for us collectively, because it has never been designed to do that for us. In fact, what they want to happen is wish we would just disappear. You know, there ain't no more cotton to pick, tobacco, sugar cane, ain't none of that. Ain't none more of that. And so your usefulness as far as they're concerned is over. And they just wish that we would disappear. You know, they've said some things openly, Brother Mickey, and I know you've probably seen them. You know, you've seen this Caucasian named Howard Nicholas, who I talk about on this program. In fact, I just played him about a month ago. That he, and what I played was something that really is old. I think it's like 10 years old. But he's speaking to a group, you know, at some kind of conference or whatever. And he's got this overhead up there, and he's speaking to the group. And he says, Africa must remain poor. Africa must never develop anything. We need their raw materials, and we need them free or dirt cheap. Because Africa, the West is rich because Africa is poor, and we must not let Africa, you know, get independence and start to develop things on its own. Now, this is him saying this many years ago. And then some of the latest I've seen is that they just want to go ahead and kill us. These Caucasians saying that we're going to let these viruses go on the continent because we need population control. We have too many people on the planet. We don't. But the people who are saying this, they ain't talking about, you know, overall population control. No, they're talking about us. And he states it. He states it.
Yeah.
As, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to in that vein, you know, when I see what's happening with the sisters and brothers, in the Niger and Burkina Faso and some of those countries.
Right. And,
yes. I'm hoping that they understand, you know, just what you said is that the imperialists have no intention of allowing Africa to be united and independent.
Right.
And they've proven that. So if you look at what they do to people, you know, even in Burkina Faso, Thomas Sankara, Patrice Lumumba, Kwame Nkrumah, anybody that sticks their head up and say, you know, Africa for Africans, we want to be independent, they become targets. And so that's always the concern when you see these emerging leaders are talking about breaking away from colonialism is, the former colonists are not going to just let that happen.
Right.
And so the question is, how can we defend ourselves and how can we maintain these movements? Because they're determined to destroy what those sisters and brothers are trying to build.
No doubt. And see, the thing is this. We could do that if we had a unified front. If the African Union was real. I mean, the fact to me showed how impotent and weak they are when they allowed, and I believe this, I don't know this for a fact, but I believe this, that they allowed these crackers to say, I don't want you talking about African Liberation Day. I just want you to call it Africa Day. Africa Day don't mean shit. But when you say African Liberation Day, that's impactful. Because that's what Africa needs. It needs to be liberated. It needs to be sovereign. And so the fact that they allowed them to change May 25th, and May 25th should be a more of important day, one of the most important days for us as African people that there is. Because if Africa is truly liberated, now we have a home. No matter where you are on the planet, whether you're in Europe, whether you're here, you know that we are free there. It is ours. It is us. You know. And so they chose Africa. They say Africa Day. I'm so mad.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was looking last year when some of these movements were taking place, some of these uprisings, the thing that was encouraging was watching the people in Burkina Faso, watching the people in Niger. I mean, our people are tired of what's happening there. They're tired of the neo-colonialism. And they see that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they responded so positively to some of the changes that, you know, of course, over here, you know, they call coups, but you call them whatever you want. The people, I'm paying attention to the people as opposed to just a takeover from the top. These are movements that the people supported, and that's what's encouraging. So, and that's why, you know, the question becomes, how do you sustain that in the face of what you know is going to be coming against you? You know,
right.
How do you keep the people involved? And that's what I'm looking forward to see. Even in Senegal, with the election there, it's the same thing. The youth, I mean, are the ones who came out and say, you know, how do we get away from this French colonialism? You know, mm-hmm. And so it's really up to the leadership to really, really listen to their people and stay in tune with their people, and let's see how far we can go with this.
Right, and that's what they should do. That's what they should do. They should fight as hard as they can against colonialists, and anybody who supports that, they should be outed. You know, I ain't talking about, you know, mass murders and so forth. I'm talking about in some kind of method, whether it's a free election or whatever it is. But we must be in control of that country. We must be in control of that land. Now, of course, you know, when you look at a political map of the continent and you see these lines on the political map, you know those lines were not drawn by us. Those lines come out of the Berlin Conference of 1884-85. You know, they come out of the Berlin Conference. And so they intentionally divided up countries and drew lines that would cause dissension, that would cause problems and issues, you know. And so, my thing is that we need to, okay. I just got a text there, my bad. Anyway, so my contention is that we need to look at how we can support these movements on the continent, us here in America, you know, because.
Yeah, and just a quick aside on that. You know, I was in Nigeria last year, and what you see is evidence of how the colonialists divided that part of Africa, where they just basically put together three large ethnic groups, as well as a number of smaller ones. And there's still a lot of contention in the government between these ethnic groups. In other times that I've been in the motherland, just trying to go from country to country.
Right.
You know, you got to
right.
borders. You got. I mean, it's absurd that you get from one state to the other. I mean, what you got to go through. Sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, the citizens have visas to get from one country to the next. And all of this is what was done intentionally by the colonists to keep Africa divided.
Yes.
So there are attempts. At unification, some of them, like ECOWAS, I mean, they are just dominated by neo-colonialists. But there are attempts to try to develop some unity, at least beginning at the regional level with some of these
right.
countries. You know, the unified currency, maybe a unified military, mm-hmm. those kind of things. But that has to happen, I think, because it's really frustrating seeing what's going on in the continent and then just being there. And seeing how it works in reality, you know, that division.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. And so, you know, what Burkina Faso has done, Nigeria has done, and a few others have done, and what you mentioned about Senegal, they're in the beginning stages of this independence, you know. And I'm looking at how that evolves to be true, that they really are in control, and then have other organizations, have other countries align with them that they get control. So to me, it's a good step in the right direction, but we need more of it. We need it to be consistent. We need that to be the norm, that to be the model, you know. And I know, too, that the issue, the problems of North Africa, because the people in the North, they don't identify with being African. They're not African, you know. They don't align themselves with Africa. They align themselves with being Arab, or, you know, and even though they have taken that land since the 600s, you know, that and they're very racist in Morocco, Mauritania, you know. I mean, shit, look what they did when Muammar Gaddafi was murdered by the West. When Muammar Gaddafi was the leader of the African Union and tried to say, hey, Africa needs to unite. He was stepping outside the serious boundary. And I give him much love and respect for that. And I know there are some who have issue with Muammar Gaddafi, and I understand that. But in that move, he was trying to unite Africa and to develop a currency, that gold dinar that his country had, you know. And when he was going to introduce that, that's when Macron and United States and all of them, let's put out a big ass negative information thing about him. Seriously, because, you know, they always said that he was crazy, right? You know, they always had that image of him that he was, you know, unhinged. But now let's really rev it up. And so we can go ahead and legitimately kill him because he is, you know, he's crazy.
And like you said, trying to defend what Gaddafi was trying to do. I mean, you're able to really see the effectiveness of the propaganda, you know, even our people. Man, why are you trying to defend him, man? Don't you know he's a tyrant?
Right.
Crazy, don't you know he's this?
You know? Right.
So it's their propaganda machine does its work.
Yeah.
Sometimes, particularly our people. I mean, if you listen to everything that you heard about Gaddafi up until that point, then you would swear that he was some kind of madman.
That's
you know?
Right.
And freedoms, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's part of the education that we really you know, have to do. I'm looking at the situation in Haiti right now. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the West really caused, I mean, historically, all the problems that we see in Haiti. And now, you know, you've got you know, the Kenyans coming in and setting up this artificial government, and you know, and the propaganda is that, well, you know, the Haitians can't govern themselves, and you know, and our people have really bought into a lot of that. You know, well, maybe it's a good thing, you know, the Kenyans are coming in to restore some order, you know, because if Kenyans are under the guidance of the United States and other imperialists,
right.
But the challenges that we have in trying to just make people understand what the reality of these situations are.
Well, I look at, you know, and I hate this, and I hate that the Kenyans allowed the United States to bait them into doing this. I really do. I hate it, you know, because the United States didn't want to send in American troops, and of course, which is a lot of us, American Africans who are in the military and who would be involved in that conflict as well. But they wanted to send in pay the Kenyans and their government for them to go in. And I think they're going to get their ass whooped. I think they're going to go in there. It's going to be ugly because those street gangs and so forth, they got weapons, you know, and they probably can get some more. So it's, you know, it shouldn't be about the fighting. It should be about some diplomatic things because these are the same people, you know. We should be able to put these damn guns down and come to this damn table and discuss this and see what's best for Haitian people. What can we do to get the French out of here and anybody else, and so we can govern, you know, Haiti. Even though it's been sharing, and the reason why, of course, it shares the island with the Dominican Republic is because the Haitian Revolution. Haiti had all of the island. And then comes the United States and Spain and so forth. Man. And so, in fact, I remember being, I think we were in Kansas City when the earthquake happened, wasn't it?
Possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the earthquake happened and then we had a conference in Kansas City. Also, too, in Kansas City was when Brother Ken Bridges was assassinated by the DC sniper.
That did happen while you were here.
Yep. Yeah. Man, what a beautiful man. What a beautiful brother. Man. I know it was random, but damn, you know, because he was a good brother, man. And so, you know, there's so many things that have pushed us back, Brother Mickey, you know, and that's why I applaud what you brothers and sisters have done in Kansas City as it relates to MBUF being the strongest chapter. It was that way when Milwaukee came in, and of course Milwaukee, you know, we're all gone, Mary Felder, she's in Mississippi, and, you know, so Milwaukee's ain't nothing happening. All the people that we have, and we were strong at one time. There are some people there still in Milwaukee, you know, but as far as the National Black United Front is concerned, you know, it's not happening, you know.
Yeah.
So, I tell you what, we're not going to take a break. We're going to run through it because I know you don't have that much time. And so we're going to talk about the convention that's upcoming, the 45th convention of the National Black United Front, and what you anticipate and what you hope will happen on those July 12th to the 14th, you know, and what you have in store. You got a good lineup that first day, that Friday. July 12th from 7 to 9, the opening community rally, which, of course, that has been pretty much the format
of MBUF over the years, hasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we always open up on that Friday with a community rally that's free and open to the public, where we introduce what the convention is going to be about, and we do some fundraising. But before we get to that,
sure.
let me talk about, if you don't mind, the theme of the convention and why we chose the theme that we did.
Sure.
The theme of the convention is preparation for reparations, building institutions for self-sufficiency and self-determination. And what we have been thinking about is, because, you know, I've been also a part of the local reparations movement. And, you know, that's a movement that has gained momentum over the last several years. But the question becomes, what if we did receive reparations? Then what? You know, then what would happen?
Yeah.
Are we in a position to actually take advantage of that? And so what we think is that in preparations, we need to build institutions in our community that are self-determinant and self-sufficient. And so what we did was we chose four areas that we're going to focus on. Education, healthcare, economics, and food sovereignty. And the idea is that in all of those areas, we're trying to look at local institutions, either in Kansas City or other places, where people are saying, how do we get off the grid? How do we begin to be self-determined? How can we take care of ourselves? And it just so happened that we have a lot of urban gardens here, and this old issue of food sovereignty was one that sort of came to the forefront. And, of course, Brother Malik McKinney, who's going to be our special guest. I've been knowing him. I think I may have first met him at a convention that we held in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And he has developed, they have developed this, the organization is the Detroit, let me get the exact name of this, the Detroit Black Community Food Sovereignty Network. And it started out 14 or 15 years ago as just the Detroit gardens. They had an urban garden there, and after a period of 14 or 15 years, they developed, and I don't know if you've seen it online, but they got a $22 million institution.
Wow.
Yeah, they opened, they had the grand opening in May, and it's anchored by a cooperatively owned grocery store. And in this building, they've got the ground floor is mostly the grocery store. And upstairs, they've got three commercial kitchens that are used by other organizations. They've got meeting spaces, and so it's sort of a community building, and it's basically cooperatively owned, and that's one of the things that we're trying to talk about, really, in all of these different areas, is how can we develop institutions that we own and control. I mean, we know what's happening with the food supply in this country. Most of it ain't even food, real food, you know.
Right.
And killing us. And part of the problem is that, you know, we just don't have control of it. The agribusinesses basically control our sources of food, mm-hmm. which they can cut off at any time. And so the question becomes, can we develop some sense of food sovereignty that we own and control? And that's the beauty of this development and in Detroit. And I really would encourage everybody to just go to, and I don't have their website handy, but it's the Detroit Black Community Food Sovereignty Network. And it tells you all about it. And the people in Detroit, you know, they're very happy. You know, what we're seeing, Osha, is that, you know, we have a lot of people who consider themselves revolutionaries, but they ain't never built nothing revolutionary. I mean, they're very good.
They're very good.
Running in line, but what institutions have you put in your community?
Right.
You know? In other words, talking about creating a different society. Okay, you can call it whatever you want. You call it social. You call it cooperative economics. But the question is, what example are you putting there for people so they can see this is what we're talking about? This is what our future could look like if we build these independent institutions. And so, what we're trying to focus on in this convention, when we talk about self-sufficiency and self-determination, is what are examples of independent community-owned institutions that we can look forward to get us out of this capitalist madness? you know, that we can own and that we can control, and that can be more a cooperative type economics as opposed to the whole idea being, you know, producing for profit. Can it be cooperative? And so what we're trying to do is explore that at this convention and to try to show people that, yeah, when we talk about a different kind of society, there are examples out here that we can look at, because I think it was Cabral, and I don't remember the exact quote, but he said something about, you know, people can't live off ideas, right?
Right.
I mean, you've got to be able to meet people's needs. You expect people to listen to you. I tell this story when we first started in Buff, and we were just out there, you know, running around, you know, doing rhetoric and so forth. And there was this minister, and I can't remember what the issue was in the community, but we thought this minister really had a foul line. And we were out there trying to really debate with this minister. But what happened was this minister had a food program at his church, right?
Okay.
Well, who do you think people went? So who do you think they listened to?
Yeah.
And we should have learned, you know, from the Panther Party.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of if you go back and look at Fannie Lou Hamer, they did these farm cooperatives.
Mm-hmm.
And this book by Jessica Nemhart, and she wrote a book on the history of black cooperatives. And it turns out that our people have, since we've been in this country, and of course this came from the motherland, you know, this whole
cooperative movement
in community, but we've always relied on cooperative economics, different types of cooperatives for survival. And so that's why we're focusing on sort of more of a cooperative type operation. And so we just felt that what Malik had created there, and it wasn't just him, but he was the leader of it, but it was just such a great example of what can happen. And so that's why we chose him to do a presentation at the opening rally. And the thing about Brother Malik is that Brother Malik is a real revolutionary national. I mean, he hates capitalism. And
right on. I do too.
What he tries is put this food sovereignty to deal with it from the perspective of black liberation. How is this part of our liberation movement? I mean, sure, it's about meeting our people's needs. Our people need some good, wholesome food, you know, not all of this chemical stuff that we're ingesting now. And that's part of it. But then how do we break away from the whole capitalist dominance of our food supply? You know, can we develop food sovereignty? In other words, food that we control, that we own, that we determine what comes into our community. And so that's going to be the focus of his presentation at the opening rally, to try to show people that this is not just about having decent food, but this is all part of the liberation movement. And so that's why we chose him to open this up for us. And and that's really what this opening rally is going to be about. And what we're going to try to do is do the same thing in each of these areas. For instance, in economics, one of the things that we created here under the leadership of the Black United Front, particularly Brother John Wood Webster, was we created this We Development Credit Union. It is a community-owned credit union that's owned by people in the community. And because we found out that a certain amount of our people were either unbanked, in other words, they didn't even have a bank.
No,
they were underbanked. Yeah. In other words, they had an account, but they couldn't get loans or anything. And so they were basically at the mercy of these check cashing places.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question, how can we deal with that? And so we started developing this community-owned credit union probably, I'm going to say, 8 or 9 years ago. I mean, I'm going to tell you, for these institutions, it takes time. I mean, you got to have some
patience.
You got to be able to sustain your, it takes time. I mean, building any kind of financial institution in this country, you got to go through all these federal regulations, et cetera. And we went through all of that. But now, last year, we had the ribbon cutting, and we opened a credit union that's owned by people in the community. You know, where our people, we teach financial literacy. They can get loans. They can get banking services that they couldn't get before. But again, it's a thing where we can say, look, this is what we're talking about, what we can do if we have a different mindset, you know, a mindset of collectivity, a mindset of cooperative type economics. This is what we can do. So we've got something that we can point to, you know. And so, you know, John Wood, of course, is back on the continent. He was here a couple of weeks ago for about almost 3 weeks. But he's gonna create a presentation it's going to be in a video format, where he's going to lay out the whole basis of WeDevelopment. And, of course, WeDevelopment Credit Union, there's a, it has a website where it kind of explains the philosophy behind it. So again, it's not just a place where our people can go to possibly get a loan and understand, you know, how to manage their finances, but it's also part of the philosophy of self-determination.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole point of it, is trying to create a different mindset about the institutions in our community, and WeDevelopment is an example. Healthcare, we've got an institution here called Uzazi Village.
It's called what? I'm sorry. What did you say, Brother Mickey? It's called what?
Uzazi. U-Z-A-Z-I. Okay. Uzazi Village.
Uzazi Village. Okay.
And it's basically, now they deal mostly with maternal health. They have doulas, and they deal with maternal health. But the idea of Uzazi Village is to get people away from the practices of these big hospitals in terms of how they do our people. There's no cultural competency in these hospitals, and so this is an organization. They have their own building, and it's an institution that, as I said, deals with it's more of a maternal operation, but their whole approach to medicine and their whole approach to taking care of our people is wholesome. It's culturally sensitive. And again, it's an example of what we can create on our own, because you know, these big hospitals, they're insensitive, and you don't know what's going on in them sometimes, and you ain't got insurance out of luck. And so again, it's another situation where we're saying, here's an example of what we're talking about. We're talking about creating a new society,
right? And doing for self.
Look and see. And even though, like I said, it focuses on maternal health, but we can expand these into different types of community healthcare centers that are owned and controlled by our community, that can really deal with healthcare that's really culturally sensitive to Black people and take care of Black people's needs.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, in the area of education, and of course, you know some of the story of what happened with African-centered education here.
Right.
So we don't have a model here, but we do have what's called the Whole Living Academy, and it is a more of an institution. It's a virtual school that promotes liberation education, and that runs the school is going to be she's going to do a presentation again, a virtual presentation on that school. But we got to talk about education for liberation.
Yeah.
And what these schools teaching our young people is not about. You know, it's about how to serve others and how to be a part of other people's system. So we got to talk about education for liberation. And then we've got a youth component in the convention where our young people are going to be addressing the issues that are pertinent to the young people. I don't have a lot of details on that right now, but there will be a separate youth component. So but also the whole focus of the convention is trying to, you know, we talk about what are our goals, you know, what are we fighting for, what are we striving for. We're fighting for a different kind of society, you know, a society that's owned by capitalist-oriented, for-profit-making motives that's in everything. You know, I mean, you know, when we talk about our food supply, it's all about how best to make the most money. You know, in our healthcare, it's about, you know, again, I mean, the reason that we can't get universal healthcare is because the pharmaceutical and lobby, that is, I mean, they don't want it. You know,
right,
because it's a profit system.
Exactly.
The same with education and economics. It's all about making profit, and you know the needs of the people be damned. So that's why we're talking about creating new society. But you got to have more than rhetoric. You got to put something in our community that people can see, they can feel, they can touch, and say, this is what we're talking about. Otherwise, you're just pissing in the wind, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not really listen to you about. You know, and that's why I go back to Cabral, who I think is one of our greatest revolutionary leaders. But you know, he came from the people, and he never forgot that. And he really understood the fact that people can't eat ideas. You know, you've got to create something for our people that they can hang on to. So that's kind of the focus of what we're trying to accomplish in this convention, to give people some education and what things can be, and that we can be successful, we can defeat this system, but it's going to take a lot of work, and none of this stuff is easy. We know what we're up against, but it can be done.
Well, see, that's the thing.
Philosophical focus of the convention.
Right on. And it sounds great, Mickey. It sounds fantastic. Because, number one, you're presenting things that are happening. You're presenting the co-op, the food co-op. You're presenting the economic piece. You're presenting the education piece. These things are happening. So you're not just giving them some theory, you know. We're talking about some things that are physically happening, and that need to be supported and expanded. So not just happens here in Kansas City, but it happens in other cities across this country where a predominance of our people are, that we can, you know, make this a model, you know. I know that we talk about sometimes, we talk about these things, but yet they're just ideas. We don't put any action into them. You guys have. Now, when you first started talking, I kept thinking about the educational piece, and then you touched on education, and it just reminded me of where you guys were some years ago. I don't know how long ago it is now, about 10 years ago, you know, when you had those buildings. You had like three.
We had a camp. We had a camp.
You sure did. I was so impressed. We had the convention at the school, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. And then.
But don't remind me of that, bro.
Okay, Mickey. I'm going to leave that alone. I got you. Yeah.
But it didn't exactly turn out the way. And there are a lot of reasons for that. I know you've already do that with some other guests, you know.
Yeah.
This is all about doing for self. It's all about self-determination, because, like you said earlier, we cannot depend on these people for our survival, because our survival is not in their best interest.
That's right.
And we have to understand. And so the question becomes, what can we do for ourselves? And we just have to show people we can do for ourselves. Even if we start on a small scale, you know, we have to show people we can do for ourselves. And you've got to, if you haven't taking a look at this Operation Detroit, I just encourage people to really look at it, because I was just really impressed by what they were able to accomplish there, and the fact that they were able to build this and continue to have the philosophical outlook on food sovereignty that they have and the meaning of it, and even though a lot of the Black folks in Detroit see it as an excellent grocery store. I mean, some of them, that's as much as they see, but that's okay for now. I mean, they know they have a place where they can get good, wholesome food.
Right. Even though they're supposed to be living in a food desert, but they have a place where they can go to get fresh fruits, fresh vegetables.
And the idea is that at some point they'll begin to understand that how this fits into our ability to liberate ourselves as Black people, you know, as African mm-hmm. people, and so that's the other point behind it, and that's what Malik is going to focus on. Now, the other thing Malik is going to do is that on the following day he's going to do a workshop that talks about how they actually built that. I mean, mm-hmm. in the rally he's going to talk about the philosophy behind it, how it fits into Black liberation, but. In his workshop, he's going to talk about here are the nuts and bolts of how we built that, because, you know, we're going to be featuring in our food sovereignty workshop some of the local urban farmers that we have here in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And already, as they learn more about it, they're like, man, you know, we could do that here.
Right.
You know? And so you got these five or six urban farms that are competing against each other for resources, et cetera. Well, what if they, you know, had some type of collective existence? Not that they got to put everything together, merge, but what if they could work collectively, mm-hmm. You know, look down the road and build something like that. And hopefully Malik will give, you know, sisters and brothers some pointers on how to get that done. And he'll tell you, I mean, I'm telling you, they started this process, I think it was maybe 13 or 14 years ago. So it ain't going to happen next year.
Right, ain't gonna happen overnight. Ain't gonna happen next year. But if you continue to work and diligently,
it's just like our credit union. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember when we first started talking about that, and that was almost 10 years ago, and we just opened that thing last year. But that's the kind of effort it takes. Even when we did the school, we worked on that school for years and years in order to, pull it out. So people have got to, you just got to be able to understand your goal and be able to stick with it, because these kind of changes don't happen overnight. You're going to have some successes. You're going to have some failures. But mm-hmm. this, to me, is what we need to be working towards as Black. We're talking about liberation. You know, we got to be working towards something that's independent from this structure that's killing our people right now.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems like this convention here, you're dealing in the four areas for our existence. You're dealing with education, the finance, the healthcare, and the food insecurities that we have. And so, man, I hope
and
you have.
It's just about the convention. You know, we're bringing back what used to be one of the fundraisers that we had in Black United Front Kansas City, was our African Heritage Ball.
Okay.
And this was opportunity for, you know, our brothers and sisters to come out and put on the garb, you know. And,
sure,
and,
sure.
Just have a good time. And so that's going to be Saturday night. We're having African Heritage Ball. And as you know, at our conventions, we always try to end on a spiritual tip on that Sunday morning.
Right.
You know,
right.
A lot of people taking off and headed back wherever they came from. But we do have we're going to have a spiritual session at a Black-owned place called the Leia, L-A-Y Center. And mm-hmm. it's really some sisters and brothers that really deal with spiritual healing. They have wholesome products there. They sell mm-hmm. teas and those kind of things. And there's a sister that's going to conduct a spiritual circle, and she calls it African Spirituality and Safe African Spaces. And so that's going to be the focus of our spiritual session that Sunday morning. So, and the other thing is that we'll be having an African marketplace at the convention site, because, you know, we always have the vendors and mm-hmm. the marketplace. So, I think I've covered most of it. I still have some time to find, brother. Okay. If you want to talk about anything else.
We got some callers. Let me take a caller here. I haven't talked to this brother in a minute. It's my good friend, Brother Irv. Brother Irv, how you doing, man? How you been?
I'm doing good, brother. Can you hear me?
I sure can. You're on with Brother Mickey Dean with the National brother. Black United Front, Kansas City chapter. They're holding their convention in Kansas City, July 12th through the 14th in Kansas City. And believe me, I don't know how long you've been listening, but it's going to be a dynamite convention. They have things where it's not just going to present to you in theory. They have things that are working. They have a food co-op. They have the credit union. They have things that are working. So this is Brother Mickey Dean. Go ahead, Brother Irv.
Brother Mickey Dean.
One last.
Go ahead.
Brother Oshie, nbuf.net, nbuf.net.
Okay.
Website, and that's where you can get all the convention information, nbuf.net.
Okay.
Fantastic.
I'll put it
on. You know, Baba Oshie, I wish I'd have known about this earlier. We have a conference that we're going to in August. I've been planning for the Black firefighters.
Right.
And I would have definitely, you know, I'm retired, brother. I would have definitely loved to do that, but I'm going to go to your website. Because mm-hmm. the things you're talking about is not reinventing the wheel. It's already been done. You guys are doing it. So it's not like I got to come up with it. All I have to do is mimic what you're doing. All I have to do is contact you and let you advise me or us or any organization as to how to do this, how to navigate through this. Because when you talk about doing things for self, you got my attention, brother.
Yeah.
You know, when we ain't got to run and ask somebody for something, or they can cut it off whenever they want. And, you know, food, destabilizing of people's food is the most powerful weapon in the world. If you notice in Africa, that's what the main thing that Arugu used to keep a government unstabilized was to destabilize the food. When you ain't eating, man, you ain't worried about no revolution. You trying to eat. So But what you brothers are doing is amazing, and I commend you for that. Thank you, my brother. Thank you.
Like you said, this ain't nothing that we came up with today. I mean, our people have been doing these kind of things historically. I mean, they don't teach us about that, but you know, we have survived. I mean, if you go back to Sister Callie House, right after
Callie House, you know, yeah, reparations,
reparations, you know, mm-hmm. and what she was talking about was really you know, type of a cooperative existence. I mean, that's what she was raising money for, and not only reparations, but also for some, you know, they were talking about how to deal with sick people, how to deal with old people, you know, raising money in a cooperative manner, how to help ourselves. And so Du Bois wrote about collective economics in the Black community. And this new book, well, it's not new, it's been out about maybe 10 years now, by Jessica Nemhard, and the title escapes me right now, but it's about cooperative economic development and the history of it. So it's not new in our community that we've been able to work collectively. Fannie Lou Hamer had the farm cooperative in Mississippi. So it's not anything that we invented, you know, this year or last year. It's part of the history of our people in trying to work self-sufficiency.
Well, you know, one of the things about that is the fact that that's who we are historically as a people. We're a collective people, a cooperative people, and that works best. But because we've been here, this society sows the seeds of dissension and discourse and dishonesty and so forth. And so there's a lot of us who don't trust ourselves. We don't trust one another. We don't believe in one another. We're not willing to work with one another. So we've been fragmented, and that makes it very difficult. But you can see that when we do, how successful we can be, you know? I would love to see that presentation by the brother on the 12th, you know? And in fact, is there a website I can see what he's done in Detroit, Brother Mickey?
Yeah. Go to the – I'm going to tell you the exact website in a minute. But it's the Detroit Black Community Food Sovereignty Network. And they have a website where they explain the whole development. And I don't know whether they have footage, but I was watching they did some video of the opening, and they had, I mean, the line for people getting into the grocery store was down the
man. Right on.
Wow. Something that people really wanted. And they really need it, and they really turned out for it.
Right on. Well, I'm gonna definitely look that up, the Detroit Sovereignty Food Network, and look at that.
Yeah, you know. Black Community Food Sovereignty Network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Man. Thank you, brother.
The website is dbcfsn.org. That's for the Detroit Black Community Food Sovereignty Network.org.
Okay, say it again.
D for Detroit.
Uh-huh.
B for Black. C for Community. F for Food. S for Sovereignty. N for Network.org. And you'll be able to see what they're doing. And I want to give you one other website, and this is for the credit union here in Kansas City, We Development Credit Union, and that website is We Development FCU. FederalCreditUnion.com. So it's all WeDevelopmentFCU.com, and that's where you can get information on the credit union.
All right, man. So I mean, once again, we're in what National Black United Front, particularly the Kansas City chapter, is doing is not presenting information about what can happen. They're presenting information on what is happening. This is going on right now. This has been developed In some cases, it's been years, but in other cases, it's right now, you know? So I'm very proud of what you guys have done, and definitely happy for the convention. I wish that you had a good attendance at the convention. I know when you mentioned years ago what happened at a National Black United Front convention, where you have over 1,000 people. Now you'd be glad if you got 300, 200 people, you know?
Yeah. But yeah. And the thing is that I just want to lift up because I'm sure that, you know, in the Atlanta area, you've got institutions that are in that vein, self-determining and looking for self-determination, self-sufficiency. And just about every, you know, just about every city, there's something happening.
Right.
You know? Just that we've got to raise up those types of institutions, highlight them, you know, whether they're educational, whether they're economic, food sovereignty, whatever. But those institutions are out there, you know, and what we're trying to do is just highlight them and use them, set them as an example. We don't have all of them in Kansas City, of course, but we know that they are there around the country, and so that's why we're trying to highlight some of them.
Right on. Yeah. Because, I mean, these are game changers for our people from a health standpoint, from a nutrition standpoint, from an economic standpoint. This is a game changer. And also, too, it could provide jobs for our people. There's a number of things that could happen with the Detroit's food cooperative, the credit union, the African-centered schools. All of this is designed for self-help for us as a people.
And let me just touch on this food thing one other time. You mentioned that I send you stuff all the time. I try not to overload people with stuff. But one of the things that I did send, and I'm pretty sure I sent this to you, was this documentary called They're Trying to Kill Us.
Yes.
And it's very informative because, I mean, all of these diseases that plague the Black community, the heart disease, the diabetes, the high cholesterol, the hypertension, all of those things
are diet related. They're all food related. Yes.
And it has 98% to do with what we eat, right? And so we can solve. And, you know, I had this conversation with a sister that's my personal care physician, and you know, one of the reasons I hate to go to her, because if any kind of ailment I got, she's got a pill for it, you know.
and
I asked her, I said, you know, I've been coming to you for a long time, you never asked me about my diet, what I eat, you know, I mean, my lifestyle, you know, I'm saying that's the core of our health problems,
right.
You know, and I know, you know, and one of the things in this documentary they go through is that, you know, they don't teach this in medical school. You know, and of course, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is not trying to heal people. I mean, if we were a healthy society, they wouldn't make any money.
That's right.
So they,
that's
prescriptions
right.
and pills, you got to, right. They don't cure anything. You know, they just try to maintain. All of this stuff is critical. And I'm not saying I want to put one or the other, but this food thing is what's killing us. And we've got to make some changes in what we eat. Eat out children.
Because of the food situation, everything else is adversely affected. The education, you know, the job situation, everything is adversely affected because our food situation has caused us to have diabetes way out of control, obesity way out of control, you know, mental disorders way out of control. So all of this is related, but yet this society won't do anything about it because why? It's about money. Just like you said, you know, the medical industry does not into cures. They're into treatment. They don't want to cure anybody. They want to treat you, you know, treat you all the way to the day your ass die. Huh?
Yeah. They want to treat you for the rest of your life.
That's right.
So because you are a profit maker for them when you got to buy these prescriptions every week or every month.
Yep. So.
And I had heart issues years ago, but you know it all related to clogged arteries. I mean, when I was single, I used to go to this old food restaurant almost every day, And I'm telling you, brother, there was nothing in there healthy.
You know, but boy, was it delicious.
I didn't cook. I'm like, oh man, this is some good food, man. But that's part of my earnings, man. And I realized, that's what it was. That's all it was. People say, well, heart disease runs in my family. Well, it runs in your family because your family eat the same thing generation after generation.
That's right.
That's right.
It's not genetic. It's not hereditary. Yeah. All it can be changed, So, diabetes runs in our family. No, it doesn't. Brother. Brother Irv, go ahead.
When the doctor says that diabetes runs in your family, what he's talking about is your eating habits. He's saying your family has the same eating habits, and you're absolutely correct, brother. It's promoted by Rugu when they show these movies of let's all go to the cookout and then they start cooking the ribs and they put on the chicken and potato salad and that's what I grew up on. So I'm not saying it's not me. And then they say it runs in because that's how you all eat. If I don't eat that at that cookout, what am I going to eat? They don't have anything that's not fried or anything that's not deep fried. So I'm going to starve. And I can't take care of myself. I'm totally dependent on my parents. So what they eat, I eat. Mm-hmm. And then I teach that to my children. And then when you meet someone like you have that has told you, wait a minute, your body can't digest that food. Not at 55 and 45 and even at 35. You can't break it down. And so now the food stays with you, and then you have health problems. Brother, you're doing a phenomenal thing with this. I didn't know you have – how many chapters is it? That's my question. Are there chapters to this organization?
In terms of fully functioning chapters, we're down to about 3 or 4 now, but we've got members in a number of cities. But as Oshie can tell you, once upon a time, we had – I'm going to say 14 or 15 chapters.
Strong.
Ago,
strong chapters.
Wow.
I said, in this trend in the movement, this revolutionary nationalist trend, we've had some losses, over the years. And so that's why we're trying to, there's a group of organizations now that's really trying to rebuild that because it's necessary, because we're all now, even though we may use the term national, a lot of us are really not what you would call national in the way that we once were. But that's, that's problematic. And in every city, there's some organization, some group that's dealing with some revolutionary nationalist tendencies, that don't want to get into the mainstream thing, that's not interested in integration, that's not interested in inclusion. In just about every city, there's somebody that does that. We just have to try to collectivize, I know there are folks like that in Atlanta in the organization that you mentioned. Brother Oshie, I'm not sure where I'm located, but I remember you turned me on to one of that conventions at one point. Mm-hmm. But we just got to sort of put our arms around each other and do something collective. We have to if we're going to survive.
That's right.
But brother, the key to it is communication. If I don't know about you, then I can't. I have to know that you exist. I have to know what you're doing and get the word out. But I know what Arubu wants me to know because it comes on TV every 5 minutes and on the radio every 10 minutes, but they don't put this on the radio. This ain't on television. You know what I'm saying? The point is, it's communication. And the thing is, for especially American Africans, we have to reach out to each other, just like this radio show does and others, reach out to each other and give them this good news. Because when you talk about food, you're talking about life. And then when you talk about an organization, that organization has a life. It grows, it becomes stagnant, and it decreases, then it grows back again. Because people, over the years, people are going to, become ancestors, and those people are powerful people. And when an elder dies, a library dies. He takes, if he hasn't passed all that information or written it down, all that information dies with him. And that's why I'm glad you're on this radio. So I can hear what you're saying, and I'm putting it in my memory bank, and I'm going to pass it on to someone else, because communication is what this is about. Thank you, my brother.
Right on, right on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you go, Brother Mickey, because you know you said that you were so, and I gotta take my grandson to his workout. So I'm going to cut the program. So give me some closing remarks in the next 5 or so minutes, Brother Mickey, and then we'll close the program out. It's not usually I do this, but since I'm up against a time situation, yeah, I got to do what I got to do.
You know, I want to say, first of all, I absolutely appreciate programs like yours. I mean, as your brother said, we got to get the word out. And programs like yours and some of the others are good. I know that right now, one of the things that I said, because I know some folks that are YouTube, what I call YouTube revolutionaries, you know, mm-hmm. and almost like they're trying to build their brand. You know, they talk about a lot of stuff. They may talk about the need to fight for socialism or whatever, but okay, so what are you doing? Other than talking about it, you know, you're not building anything, you know, and I'm not saying that some of those shows are not good, but you know, we need more institution builders than we need YouTube revolutionaries, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and so I think that you know the message that I have is that first of all, we do have to read and study and understand some things theoretically in terms of what's in our best interest and what's not. But you know, as Brother Cabral said, that's got to be put on the ground where our people can see it, and give our people some hope that there is a future. There are some things that we can do to get out of this situation. And if we don't build these independent institutions, if we don't really fight for some type of self-determination and self-sovereignty, then we're just going to be at the mercy of our oppressors. And so that's what I've learned in all of these years that I've been in the movement, that we have to be able to depend on ourselves. And you can only do that to a certain extent when you're in the belly of the beast. You know, we understand that.
Yeah.
But to the extent, we have to try to develop a certain amount of self-sufficiency. And then the other thing is that we talk about reparations. One of the key forms of reparations is what we call internal reparations, because we have been psychologically damaged over the years. And we demand reparations from those that have oppressed us. But internal reparations is what we have to do for ourselves. We have to fix ourselves.
Right. That's right. You know?
And we have people out there. I heard you mention the sister that wrote Yoruga. Sister Ani, I mean, people like that really give us a blueprint in terms of how we got in the position that we're in psychologically. So those internal reparations are very important because we've got to fix ourselves psychologically, emotionally, and that's a major part of this whole thing of reparations is to really heal ourselves internally.
Right, and that's the thing. And if, once again, Ken Bridges, you know, he was the one that, when we had that Flint conference, talked about internal reparations, when we had the Millions for Reparations movement, you know, that we need to repair ourselves internally so we know why we get reparations. We know what we're going to do.
And that was one of our ancestor, Conrad Wars. That was one of
That's
the
right.
things that he talked about, internal reparations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I miss Conrad, man. Man.
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah, man. So... All right, Brother Mickey, thank you for hanging on with me. We'll be back with you again. And in fact, I'd like to find out how things went with the convention, so to get you back on.
It's always a pleasure, and always enjoy talking to people that are revolutionaries. You know,
That's
people
right.
that I highly respect. So you one of those brothers.
Well,
so
you too, dear brother.
Come on, man. You know you got me.
Right on, Brother Mickey. You have a blessed and wonderful day, my brother. Peace to you.
Right on. Black power.
Black power. All right, Brother Irv. Thank you, man. Thank you, Brother Irv. Appreciate you, man. I haven't heard.
You know, no, Bobby, you know, I'm riding with you, man. I'm riding. You know that. Come on.
Right on. Right on. All right. I gotta go. Gotta get this young man to his practice, man. So I'm finna get out of here. All right. Peace.
Do your thing. Yes, right. Sir. Peace.
We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed.
This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahadie, Bibi Fahadie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Peace, family.